Welcome to the Secrets of Brands webinar. This is a season two of the e-commerce made simple podcast. I'm Jérôme Deguigné, your host. And today I'm super happy to welcome Lorena Gonzalez from Mattel, a brand which with whom we're working. And today our topic is a very specific and technical maybe a topic about how to use a PIM, like a product information management software, how you can use that and make sure that it helps you in your day-to-day task and make you more efficient when you have a very large catalog and a lot of endpoints, so a lot of websites you want to send your content to.
One thing I noticed on this, Jerome, which I thought was really interesting, was just the whole idea of using time at the beginning and using a lot of time to learn how to use the tool, but then the time that you will gain back in the future using PIMs. I mean, so that for me, I think a lot of time, the whole idea of using a lot of time to train up on a certain tool doesn't appeal to people. But I think in this webinar, you really sold the fact that eventually this will save you much more time than you use learning how to use it.
Yes, when you think about it, when you hire someone to help you in your task, you need to spend time or waste time into brackets. It's like teaching them how to do it, learning. So at the beginning, you will be slower. But once they know and they can pick it up, then they will be much more efficient. And with tools, there's probably the belief that, okay, you got the tool, you'll be more efficient. Well, it's not as easy as that. It's like it's same with Excel sheets, for example. It's like each time you have a change on Excel, you need to get up to date, right? Otherwise, you'll lose a lot of time. With a tool like Salsify, it's user friendly. However, you still need to have the time to spend on learning it, making sure everyone is clear about it. Also, your team. And once everyone has got it, then you save a lot of time. We've had examples with some of our large content management projects where we've saved up to 50% of our time using a tool like Salsify, for example, which is one of the well-known PIMs of our world.
Shall we get rolling then and have a listen to you and Lorena?
Yes, great idea. I hope you will like this one and enjoy the show. Here we go. So welcome, everyone. Very happy to have this a new episode of the Secrets of Brands webinar, and I'm super happy today to welcome Lorena from Mattel to talk about how to use technology to help you simplify so PIM related tasks. We'll go into all the details of what is a PIM, the technology and how that helps actually brands to grow and expand. But maybe as we get started, Lorena, could you give a few words about yourself, who you are, to the crowd?
Sure. Hi. Thanks, Rob. I am Lorena. I've been working in Mattel for the last 12 years, and I used to be a key account manager for the first 8 years of it, looking after accounts in Spain and regional Europe. And then I moved into digital marketing and then made it to the regional role for the team that looks after syndication and creation of product detail pages. So that's me.
That's from a worker perspective. So we could say you're an expert in content, and that your life revolves around content and making sure content goes from what is being created to the online space, right?
Yes, that you can say that, at least that I spend significant amount of my work life in making sure that our content reaches the touch points.
Great. Awesome. And so I'm Jerome. I'm the founder and the CEO of Ecommerce. Who is Ecommerce? We're an agency, a full service Amazon agency. We use, say, 360 degrees approach with offices in the US, in Luxembourg, where our headquarters are, and in India, also in Madagascar. So really in Asia, Africa, Europe, and the US or the Americas. You can see we have a lot of different verticals in which we work, and we work a lot on like content. Well, our 360 degrees goes from strategic consulting, account management, retail media, so advertising, and we also do retail and logistics because we have our own account. Today we'll be talking about the part where we called strategic consulting, whereas we help brands understand and navigate the technology also to grow and expand their brands. But let's get started a bit into our story, Lorena, and you'll help us understand what is a PIM Actually, what is it like? What the three letters? But beyond that, could you explain a bit what it is and what it means for brands?
Sure. So PIMIC, it's an acronym that refers to the systems that manage all the information around one product, helps them collect it in one place, and then also allows to show one single view of a product, regardless where the information comes from. And then it also helps the company to share it with different, either downstream systems or retailers. In my case, I specialize more in retailers. But yeah, that would be like a theme.
And like there's a lot of, in those world of tools, there's a lot of acronyms, because you've got DAM systems with the digital assets, you've got ERPs, you've got PIMs and the syndication parts. Can you explain from your perspective, because there's a lot of different solutions out there, but how does a bit the flow goes between those different pieces, let's say?
So yes, I guess every company must have their own ecosystem, but yes, for Mattel, we do have an ERP, we do have a DAM that is upstream to our partner, to Salsify. So it's an upstream system. So once the assets are completely final in our DAM, if they are meant to be implemented in e-commerce, they would flow into Salsify. And we also have another upstream legacy, upstream system for copywriting and translations. So all that would feed into our Salsify PMX instance, and we would also collect information from that we help manually to move from one place to another, like information, some pieces of information from quality, some other marketing information, etc., that we put manually into the system. So as much as you can automate, the better, but probably you'll have to bridge some of it with manual efforts.
Okay, so if I understand well, you've got different feeds coming into that PIM system, which sort of integrates everything and then sends it to the retailers, right?
Yes. I mean, from there, we put together the different tactics depending on the retailers, that maturity that they have, or their preferred way of receiving the information. We put together the necessary tactics to send it over to them.
Okay. And if we sort of break down a bit the different process, so you've got all the upstream part. So you were talking about one where you have all the
like, images, the copies, yeah, etc.
The dancing or the digital asset part. And then you've got a part where you have some extra copywriting or translations or other things you added. What are the typical issues, or what are the things you need to be careful about when you're looking at this upstream flow?
I would say that for us, it can be sometimes we need to be very mindful of to verify if the automations work okay. They might get tricky sometimes. So yes, you want to have that as smoothly as possible too. But yeah, that can be a challenge sometimes.
So what I hear is that it's a lot about the technology a bit between those bits. You need to create some automation or some feeds, which have to be a bit customized each time, because it's depending on your needs, right?
Exactly, yes.
And that will
probably fall outside the business team's area, that would need proper IT support.
Okay, so first thing is obviously the IT, the importance of the IT, getting the IT teams involved. Now, if we look at the PIM itself, how would you, what in your eyes are the main benefits of PIM for you and your daily work?
Well, to be honest, I don't imagine a world of a big company without having a PIM. First, because it makes the learning curve for any new user of the company shorter. You have one place to go to that has the source of truth for every user, which is good. Otherwise, it forces old users and new users, but it can be even more disturbing for new users to go to different sources or different different sources along the company. It's easier first, it's faster, and then proper PIMs have transformation capabilities. So the possibility of using the information as it is stored and modifying it with business rules to the expectation of the touch point. So this is sounds a little bit geek, but you know, in, to make it come into real life, the categorization of the product, and we might categorize the product as a doll, which is, you know, we work in toy industry, so we have all our Barbies in dolls, but maybe dolls is not the exact categorization that Amazon or Target or, you know, the multiple retailers that we have in the region would accept. Maybe they want that to be called dolls and accessories. So it's just a very simple rule to transform one value into the other once we know what the expectations are, or renaming images following a specific business rule as using the retailer ID code, stuff like that, which can be countless hours of manual work, can be resolved very fast with a proper team.
And so on that part, I hear also there's an element of, if you want to do changes for a vast amount, like a vast size of catalog, is there a point where you say, okay, what kind of size of catalogs, at what point does it make sense to have a PIM? Is there a limit in your mind or not really? What?
I would say, I guess every company has its sweet spot between the level of investment in technology and the level of complexity that they need to look after. But I would say if you're looking at a catalog that is above 200 references, if you're, you know, the if the percentage of newness of the catalog year to year is, you know, over 30%, if you're looking after multiple languages or multiple retailers, all that are good signals that you might want to have everything in one place and with transformation rules in place.
Okay. That makes sense. Do you have other examples of like things which can be automated or which you find are crucial in on the PIM? You talked about, okay, maybe some attributes or categories need to be changed for all like a big number of SKUs in one time. Are there other things of or automations you yes. have in mind which makes a lot of sense?
That's a very good question. And I would call out probably two more use cases. One is around having the possibility to offer open catalogs, self-service catalogs for different touch points. Like you might not have the bandwidth to service each retailer or each wholesaler or whatever in your region, but you might have the bandwidth to create one open catalog from which any of them can connect and download their own information that is always synchronized to your PIM instance. So that's a very powerful tool. And I would also call out the power of workflows. So some of the people of the audience might or might not be familiar with what a workflow looks like, but I would say that good material for workflows are stuff that happen at high volumes, processes that happen at high volumes that might need a sequence, you know, step one performed before step two, you know, and then step three, so that can that always happen in the same sequence, and that the causes or outcomes can be predicted with, you know, a fair degree of certainty. It's not a good, you know, if you have proper processes that look like that, you know, whenever a product becomes available, then you need to create an ASIN, then you need to things that look like that, then workflows is something that you might be interested in looking into because it saves a lot of manual effort. And also it makes the detection of some critical events come fast because it's a machine working for you as opposed to somebody looking into multiple spreadsheets or whatever. And those two were massive breakthroughs.
And I feel like I totally agree with the workflow part is the one which is super interesting, but it seems sometimes that it doesn't go through to really being put in place in some cases. Do you have examples of workflows you've seen really work very well without giving any secret recipe, but it's like, although it's the title of the webinar, but like things you've seen work very well and you would recommend other brands using?
Well, I mean, the one that worked really well for us, but again, it's a very Mattel-centric thing, is detecting that we have the right materials in place, so the image assets and the translated copies, to execute feature callout images. So images that have text in it, they need to be localized. Like if they have a little text in English, in order to implement it in French retailers, we need to translate that text and re-render the JPEGs. So of course, with more than 300 items that have these kind of images times 8 languages that we look after, it becomes a significant amount of, you know, of cases to do. And the governance of the process itself can be tricky. Okay, for which items do I already have the images for? For which items do I already have the copy translated for? So all that is what we put together into a workflow to let us know when the materials are ready, instruct the designers to re-render the JPEGs, and then re-upload it into the DAM, and then, you know, then triggering more instructions once the images reach our Salsify instance again. The translated images, if that makes sense, reach our Salsify instance again. So again, it is a very Mattel-centric way because that's the way that we receive the information. But I would probably say that as long as you know your own processes, so you know your business processes, and you start developing some sensitivity around creating instructions. So, you know, it's a little bit about learning the language of business and learning the language of IT at the same time. That creates a very powerful advantage or a very powerful tool.
Yeah, and I feel a lot of like anything around translations, there will be like a third party, be it, you know, an agency, a translation partner, or even internal teams. There's always a third party which will be involved and check in making sure that, you know, the proper people are tagged or pinged when the task is uploaded and stuff like that. I think that's very relevant to any brand. Do you have any other workflows you've seen are maybe out or specific or a bit different, which you think makes sense? Is there, like, I know sometimes you can have validation rules, like where you sort of force in the system that, okay, this field has to be 70 characters long or whatever for titles. Have you been using that, which is not really a workflow, but
that's a kind of a governance one. We have not used it. I mean, personally, I have not, but I also think because that fortunately we receive it from upstream systems already, in a compliant way. But yes, they can be very useful if for companies that need to perform that. So my team doesn't have that particular challenge, but I can see other contexts that this would be a very relevant use case. Or also, if there's a piece of critical information that is missing, and all the rest is ready to syndicate, it might trigger a workflow for a particular team to complete. For instance, if you have, I don't know, all the content ready, but you don't have the cost of the product to push it to the retailer, you might, you know, create a workflow for the sales teams or something, stuff like that. That would also be helpful.
Okay, I think that makes a lot of sense. In terms of on those workflows and looking, taking a step back also, is Mattel is obviously in every country, and you probably got a regional organization and a global organization. How could you give a bit of perspective on the different countries, and for the people who are listening who could be also in a large organization with a lot of different countries? How do you feel? What are the good things of having a PIM and sometimes the limitations, because it's not very easy to have a lot of stakeholders potentially come in and maybe, you know, touch the content, and then, you know, and that there's all that, you know, making sure it's compliant, making sure that everyone is using the right content and not tampering with it. So what are the benefits and a bit the threats or challenges from your point of view?
That's a super good question. So every company will have to find its sweet spot again. You know, PIMs are not a product that you just bring out of a shelf and you consume it right away. You need to tweak it to your organization. And that's why it's good to have a flexible tool. There has to be a balance between the the group of people in the organization that can actually do stuff with the tool. You know, when I say do, it's not being a consumer, but also being a, having a seat at the table to for the business modeling, the, this kind of decisions. And the, also being ruthless enough with the governance rules, because otherwise it can get out of control. So the way that we tackle this in Mater is that we have, I would say, a nice and small but very proficient group of people knowing the tool, like 4 or 5 people in Europe knowing the tool, and with constant you know, contact with our US counterparts that are also in the same position as we are. And then we foster adoptions to the other teams, like marketing teams or sales teams. And I would say that we, the way that we do it is we grant first a very basic role. A very basic role can only read stuff and touch nothing. And once they get proper training and they, you know, they pass the official certifications or they demonstrate that there is enough proficiency in the tool, we might upgrade them into having more superpowers into it. But I do think it's a good idea, as you mentioned, to be aware of not people not tampering with content happily, because it can, yeah, it can produce gaps otherwise.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is that you're being cautious about, especially in such a large organization as yours, to going at least step by step and keeping a good, decent level of control. A lot of organizations are based on the country specific when it comes to e-commerce, right? Because they will have, because e-commerce will belong to the sales teams and then the media team also. The content is sometimes also pretty local. Do you see a switch of organization go more to a regional organization, because you're heading a regional organization about e-retail content? What do you see a move towards that? What do you think are the pros and cons of these two, like multi-countries or pan-European? What's your approach, knowing Amazon is getting more and more pan-European, for example?
So for us, it's a clear direction into into not duplicating efforts. You know, it's the, like, kind of the first rule of efficiency: try not to duplicate the same efforts that your colleagues are doing. So as much as we can leverage from one centralized material creation point of view, the better. It also, of course, means that sometimes it can be tricky to become very local on one particular asset, but we are happy to pay that cost, if it makes sense.
Okay, so it's if I understand well, it's still focusing a lot on the larger regional level rather than having duplicating that.
Yes, don't create the content locally. I mean, we transcreate, of course, the source language, but we don't create locally.
And are the local, you tell me if this is too being too precise, but are the local teams getting involved in the creation in their own languages, or this all under your team and you're handling that?
With minimal intervention, I would say local teams.
Okay. So, and it's... Yeah,
life is not perfect, so we cannot remove it completely off their shoulders, but we try to minimize it.
Yeah, and what's the approach? Because sometimes you could feel in some organization that the local teams might have a feeling that, you know, people are taking away their work, or that the global team will not know the specificities of you know, French, Polish, whatever the local language. How is your organization reacting to the fact of saying, okay, actually, this is a workload which is removed from them? Is that working well, or is that you feel there's sometimes some tensions, let's say?
No, we haven't sensed tension in that arena. Maybe okay. Maybe my predecessor faced it, but the way that since I got the role, I don't feel that there is any tension around about that. Probably because our teams are also not that large, So if the marketing lead would have to dedicate his or her time into creating the specific e-commerce content, it would be overwhelming.
Okay, and which I understand, but one of the things I wanted to touch on there is like there's an element of governance and an element of organization, right? And maturity of the organization when you're entering into a PIM, because it's also about changing habits, organization, organizing stuff, changing the ways you've been doing it for time. Do you have or some experience in Mattel or in your business life of this change? How difficult is it? And do you have any tips about, you know, how to make that sort of change happen in an organization from what you've seen?
So I have not personally led such changes. I mean that changed the whole team, but I read on this topic. So I'd probably say it's about having the right people sitting on the table, on the planning table, making sure that you capture areas of the business that you might not necessarily be familiar with, and they will have a butterfly effect. You know, some things that you change over here might have an unexpected change. I mean, unexpected to yourself because you're not familiar to it in other areas of the business. So I would say you need to have a diverse group within the implementation team. That would be my recommendation. Okay. And make sure that these people that they will be efficient, and I mean they will like technology, they will be, you know, willing to test stuff, willing to do that, willing to learn the, you know, to bridge the probably language gap between IT and business, but also with the ambition to change organization, you know, to socialize the tool, to bring up the advantages of moving into a new tool, to bring up the use cases, to evangelize around the tool. We need to have that kind of profiles within the teams that do the implementation.
Yeah, because end of the day, the adoption is a bit the tricky part, right? For any tool, yes, and for any adoption organization, a small one like ours or very, very large ones like Mattel. And how do you address that a bit, adoption? Like you gave some hints about, okay, evangelizing, making examples of, like how do you feel that is going? Is that still an everyday challenge, or what's your experience over that?
So even though we've had our PIM for over 4 years, I would say probably in the last year and a half, we have a massive increase of users for the tool in the region. And I would say it comes hand in hand to being resilient in explaining stuff once and over again, because, you know, it's for the first people that hear on a topic for the first time, they will probably not grab all of it, as, you know, as if you explain it to somebody who's working on one topic every single day of their lives. So you need to be patient. You need to show the advantages. And we've had a lot of satisfying experiences with sales teams in the area. When we show them, you know, this takes you like 3 hours to do it without a tool. Let's do it with the tool. It takes you 15 minutes. You know, yeah. Yes, you will have to go through the learning curve, but you know, this thing, you do it, you know, 5-6 times a year, it's worth the effort. So there's a resistance always to learning new stuff. That's normal, we're human. But if you show the benefits, you know, you need to concentrate the benefits, and that makes it a sexier message.
And I know you mentioned when we talked in preparation that the fact of bringing the different people to the table, like e-commerce is a great, I find it brings people to speak together, like sales, retail media, but also now IT and like content people, right? It pushes that, because PIM is to be used by different stages by a lot of people, right?
It is. You're right. That's right. It's a very good way to define it. It takes a village to raise a kid, and it takes a village to syndicate content.
Exactly. And it's funny because I was in on the Prosper show about talking about Amazon and talking with Amazon advertising, and we're saying the first thing to build success. So obviously you have logistics to set up to make sure you can deliver products. That's for sure. But this the very first thing after that is really content, and make sure that you have good content to speak to consumers. So sales will not happen. Retail media will not be efficient if the content piece is not really working very well. So it pushes that part. I have a question around that, because sometimes IT teams have got loads of different projects, and you could have D2C project, you could have logistics projects, the supply chain, lots of things. How do you feel that, you know, modern IT teams are getting into this thing about talking about content and having those tools and making those connections with the different systems? What's your experience on that? Do you feel it's going well? It's still taking time.
So in our experience, it's not IT teams looking after content itself. So we have a group of a team that looks after, you know, proper copywriting, assets creation, that kind of stuff. Then we have IT team that makes sure that this flows from one system to another. And we have business teams such as my own and also the counterparts in the other regions that we try to be kind of in the middle. So we are not as proficient with IT as IT teams. We are not as creative as the creative team, but we try to interpret it both languages and also to introduce the concept of content optimization to try to test what works better and to input the way that the studios, that the artistic teams would develop the content for the next season.
So if I put it in my own words, you have your team is at the crossroads. I was looking for I had Carrefour in French, but it doesn't work. At the crossroads of different teams. And would you say that it's a key to success to have those people making sure that the difference between the creatives, the sales, the IT, all those people connect together through and with the same goal? Because a PIM will not do exactly what everyone wants. It will do it the way it does it, right? So is that a big work of yours, is to do diplomacy in a sense? Or?
Well, it's not really diplomacy. It's about, you know, transforming data into insights. It's about sharing it in the right way. So I would say that the world cannot work in silos, neither for this role or for any other. You need to partner with your colleagues to join the different perspectives of the business in one table if you want the organization to move faster. I mean, I'm not discovering anything new, but if you work in silos, you probably work slower.
Mm. And I find it very interesting that, especially working with Amazon, but to be fair, anything in e-commerce, it sort of breaks a lot of silos, which were very well organized for years in large companies, and they have to reinvent themselves all the time to address those things about like making sure you're successful in e-commerce. So we'll start to open to questions. So if people have questions, please do put them in the Q&A section. I have one for you, Lorena. Is about there's a lot of PIM tools in the market. So obviously we're a Salsify partner, and we've been working together on that Salsify part. So we'll be talking about Salsify, but there's other tools. What would be your recommendations for any company looking to work on their PIM? There's different levels of PIM, right? You have very wide PIMs, you have simple PIMs only to do syndication. What would be your tips basically on that part?
I'd probably say, you know, spend more time thinking of the problem than thinking of the solution. So understand what your business challenges are, what are the painful areas, where you spend most time, what causes the more churn, and then look for the tool that satisfies that. You know, probably you need to partner with your procurement team or something like that or to call the players and ask them for a pitch. But you need to think of your challenges first, rather than buying a solution and expect them to fix it. Unfortunately, it's not a recipe or not a recipe that I know of, at least, that would help.
And One of the questions I was talking earlier was a member of our team who's looking after partnerships, and we were talking about the fact that there's multiple tools when you're looking at the process. You've got content, you've got retail media, obviously, but if you get closer to content, you've got order management, you've got potentially, you know, pricing mechanisms, things like what's your, you're obviously focused on the content side, but like, how do you feel if you take a step back about all those different tools and all those different bricks? Obviously, it's super relevant when you're D2C. When you're B2B2C, it's less relevant. But I feel there's so many tools now which are appearing, and with a lot of competitors in each sectors, like in PIMS, in DAMs, in ERPs, in order management and stuff like that. What's your approach on that? You think that companies will have to have, you know, those different tools because DTC will become a must probably at some point? What's your approach on that?
It's
a wide question.
It's a wide question indeed. Probably the answer is, I would offer kind of the same answer that I offered you before. You cannot expect a roadmap to be finalized from one day to another. You probably need to think, okay, to do an overarching strategy of what you want to finally reach, and then to break it down into what you want to solve first and what you can postpone and solve later on. It moves fast. There are multiple options all the time. There will be even more multiple options within a year or two, and even more with three. So you cannot expect to hit perfection on the first attempt, probably. So I would say focus on the stuff that you really need to solve on your watch during that year. Try to have it fixed. Learn along the way. If it's not the perfect solution, you will have to iterate. But I don't have a perfect answer for that one.
Yeah,
or hire a good consultancy company such as yours.
Thank you very much indeed. But and to that point, it's like, is there any like technology or tools kind of team? Because even for us, it's like keeping up to date with all the different tools which are in the market is becoming nearly a full-time job. Do you feel like in procurement or in the IT teams, I don't know, is there where do you feel in Mattel or in other bigger companies, teams which are starting to say, okay, we need to have the thinking about technology as a whole into a whole process? Do you see that yet or not really?
I'm starting to see that in Mattel as well. Having a team dedicated to marketing transformation.
Which is digital transformation in general. I feel in e-commerce it's getting a bit overwhelming because you get tools every day in the market from multiple things happening. We didn't talk about much about the last part, the syndication part. PIMS, generally speaking, when they sort of pitch, they are solving two type of issues. One is the single source of truth, which you were talking about, is like having one place where you've got all your data. And the second one is really syndicating, so pushing content everywhere. Now the market here is also fragmented. There's a lot of suppliers offering syndicating, some syndication, some can syndicate everywhere, some less, some, do you have an approach or a belief on that? And that's a lot of discussions we've had in the past also, but because there's so many retailers with themselves, different technologies, your technology doesn't adapt, like not always your PIM, so could be Salsify, doesn't adapt everywhere. How do you feel things are going? You feel it should be a hybrid thing where you have partially it's automated and partially it's manual? How do you feel the things are going to go on that end?
I mean, short, middle term, there will always be a part that is manual because you cannot expect to have an API connection to every single retailer in the fragmented landscape of Europe. So, yeah, I would say that that's still to happen for a few number of years.
And you were talking about Saltify called Sites and Experiences, which is like digital catalogs. Do you see some retailers accepting, saying, okay, I'll go and I'll take the data from there? Or is that, I feel that sometimes it's a bit difficult to get them to do that work, and they expect the brands to upload a bit on the Amazon style.
Well, in fact, uploading into the CMS of the retailer, it's quite a unique case of Amazon. The rest of the retailers, you need to send it over to them and they do it themselves. They don't give access to a CMS. Whether they pull it down from a catalog or they want a WeTransfer document, that remains a conversation. But even if they would only accept, a SharePoint or something like that, it's still easier to pull it out from a one single source of truth than to attempt it to fill it from multiple, systems. So yeah, I would still think it's a good idea to have a bit.
And maybe as a bit of a wrapping up part is like from the different experiences implementing the PIMs and having this syndication partially automated, partially manual. What are the main learnings for you, which we could share about, what really goes well and what didn't go well, and maybe we could be mindful about in the stuff which, is great and less great, let's say.
So I would say that one of the difficult pieces around about automation is deciding what to automate. Ultimately, probably everything can be automated, but it comes at the cost as well, either dollar cost or, internal teams bandwidth cost. It comes there's no free lunch. So one of the things that we had to learn along the way is how to promote the adoption and the benefits of the tool, and at the same time say no to some potential initiatives because the critical mass, the size of the prize was not that large. So we had to be proficient in assessing which projects of automation made it to the to-do list or to the backlog, and which won't and will never make it because the automation just would not outcome, they would not be advantageous enough to the organization.
So that I find super interesting is like sometimes automation look great on the paper, but if you go into it, you actually lose a lot of time for an outcome which is not so great. Is that a bit what you're
saying? Yeah, it's that. It's also the how many SKUs do you have to syndicate to that particular retailer? How long does it take to to fill the template? Some templates are pretty easy to fill. Some templates are pretty complicated to fill. Which is the revenue that comes from it. All those questions you need to make sure to ask them. Otherwise, you will end up with an infinite to-do list of channel creations or whatever that you need to choose your battles.
Okay, makes a lot of sense of picking the battles, and technology is great, but it can be you can be like the gerbil running in your little wheel and not looking out of why you're doing it. Thank you so much, Lorena. It was great having you today, talking about how to make the most of your PIM system. I have a question before I leave you. Sorry, I didn't see it. How and where did you manage the differentiation between the content for your brand sites, D2C, and the one adapted and shared with retailers? So different copies of the same.
No, I would say 99% of it, except, very singular attributes such as the product title are consistent between the retailers and D2C environments.
So, but on the ones which have got specificities, you create specific attributes, which is only for one type of retailer, let's say Amazon title.
We
know them. Okay.
Yes, but we don't have only Amazon. Yes, we have that, but we have some others as well. And we create specific attributes for that. But I would say we try to minimize that as much as possible, because again, content adaptation by retailer. It's also a very resource consuming activity.
Okay, yeah, I agree. And to that point, like having a global / regional data modeling, it also means that sometimes you might miss some specificities of local markets. And like if we stay on the simple Amazon example, like Amazon US and Amazon Europe would probably have sometimes different attributes. Is that, how do you handle that sort of specific country like needs? Do you manage to make sure everything is polished on that part, or is it sometimes it's manual process locally? Is it a bit of both?
A bit of both, depending on the particular challenge. So if it comes to trying to make our content more SEO optimized, we have some local intervention on that. If it comes to be, I don't know, specific attribute that is requested in one area and not another one, depending on how mandatory it is, and we also have a roadmap of attributes that we will incorporate into the BIM. We cross the bridges when we face them. Again, it's also about choosing the battles.
Yeah, and like you said, it's about, okay, sometimes maybe there's a bit of manual work, but versus the amount of work which would be needed to like achieve something or some automation or adding or changing the data model, it's always looking at what makes sense. I think it's interesting, and it's then for every brand to look at it and balance those different things. I think we don't have any other questions, so I can re-say thank you, Lorena. And it was a great having you today. If anyone has got questions, you can reach out to us on LinkedIn. It was great having you. I think I have a thank you page. Yes, and you even have emails and stuff to get in touch with us. So thank you very much, everyone. Have a great end of day and see you very soon. Thanks, Lorena.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Have a nice rest of the day.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.